Welcome. Welcome to the Heathen Machine Chronicles. I'm your host, the Heathen Machine. All right, back with another episode. It is hot as shit here in Missouri, and I think across probably a lot of the country, but I think today that feels like is about 115 degrees. It's crazy. We haven't had any rain. It's dry. The grass is turning brown. You can see the leaves on the trees are wilting. So it'll be interesting to see how all that will handle this extreme heat. I hope all of you are staying cool. If you are in these places that are experiencing this crazy heat wave, make sure you're staying hydrated, taking care of yourselves. UFC 276 happened this weekend, and there were some disappointing fights. But the biggest takeaways from those fights was that Volkanovski is on a whole nother level. To see what he did to Max Holloway was incredible, because nobody has ever done that to Max Holloway. And Max Holloway, for the longest time, was considered one of the best boxers in the UFC. And Volkanovski just pieced him apart, just made him look like an amateur. And I think now people are starting to really understand that Alexander Volkanovski might possibly be one of the all-time greats in the UFC. Now he's talking about moving up to 155 to be a double champ. And that would be really interesting. You know, he's a great wrestler. So it'd be interesting to see how he do against Oliveira. A lot of people already are picking Oliveira to beat him. But I think Volkanovski is a different beast. You know, we saw in the Ortega fight, Ortega is a top-notch grappler. And he had two chokes synced in. And Volkanovski just shrugged him off and then got on top and proceeded to beat the shit out of Ortega. Pretty amazing stuff. Not much going on here. The Heathen Machine Homestead. Just trying to stay cool. Got my master's program. I'll be starting that in August, which I'm really excited for. Get to work on my novel and some more of my creative writing endeavors, because that's the ultimate goal, is to write killer fucking stories. So today I was originally going to talk about our relationship with food, but I randomly saw a clip from one of Jocko Willink's podcasts on YouTube. I don't typically listen to him. I know who he is, but he was talking with Tim Kennedy, and they were talking about the difference between the Navy SEALs and like the Green Berets. So they got into talking, and they started talking about the other branches. They were especially positive about the Marine Corps, specifically the Marine Corps infantry. And it was really kind of interesting to hear that, because I've heard it before. You know, it's funny because oftentimes the Marine Corps gets bunched in with like the Rangers and these special forces units, which is definitely attributed to great marketing. But the Marine Corps infantry, look, the Marine Corps infantry is definitely a good example of quantity and quality, right? That's the interesting thing about the Marine Corps infantry, is, you know, our training is very aggressive. Our tactics are very aggressive, and that's how we train. We train that way. Well, I was going to talk about our relationship with food, which I will do next week. Instead, that conversation got me, you know, thinking about some of the things we did in Afghanistan that really didn't have to do with combat. It's easy to keyhole grunts, especially in the Marine Corps, into a corner of, you know, bulldogs or, you know, aggressive and dumb, whatever. There are a lot of derogatory names, but you don't often hear about the things Marines do, especially in a combat zone, that is almost humanitarian in a way. You know, it shows the human side of who we are, especially in combat, especially in areas that are very dangerous and hostile. Because, you know, and we have to make those decisions on who's hostile and who isn't. So instead today, I wanted to share with you a piece of writing I had published in issue number 6 of So It Goes, which is the literary journal of the Kurt Vonnegut Museum and Library. And the piece is called Oh, the Humanity. And in it, I discuss a situation where kind of the Marine Corps and war and all this stuff was forgotten about, and we got to connect with a family and the children. And for just this very brief moment in time, there was a very interesting experience, human experience, where we weren't separated by borders or oceans or ideologies or governments. We were humans having a human experience. And I think in today's world, it's important to share these kinds of stories because compassion and empathy are sorely missing today, especially in the United States, especially with the political discussion that's going on. The extremes on both sides are unfortunately speaking way louder than I think the leveler heads that sit in the middle. Neither side is willing to be compassionate. Neither side is willing to have any kind of empathy. It's just anger and hate. And we got enough of that shit. So without further ado, I want to share with you my experience, my story, Oh, the Humanity. It was a war zone worlds away. A place existing in another time, long since faded into the past, then forgotten about. Primitive in every sense of the word. But it was a place where a shred of humanity could still be found when you least expected it. It was in the middle of my deployment, fresh after our company moved to 2 new patrol bases. The area was kinetic, hostile. It wouldn't be long before we realized our deployment was about to kick up a few notches. The base we occupied personified the Afghanistan experience. It was a rugged outpost on the frontier lines of a hostile land that wanted us dead as much as the Taliban we fought against. We lived in an old compound, abandoned long ago. A typical setup for most of the dwell structures in the area. The walls were made from mud that was cut in giant bricks from the ground, feet thick and hard as rock, baked under unforgiving skies. They were tall once, when a family still lived within, but sections of it were crumbling in. 3 Basex tents crammed the large communal area that was open to the elements. Just under 40 Marines and corpsmen, packed 12 to 14 per tent. It was quiet. Besides the Combat Operations Center, the COC, we had no power. Daytime temps hovered in the 110s or hotter, nights in the 60s or 70s, the only relief we ever got from the heat. We were weeks in our new AO when 1st Platoon took a casualty, a young Marine shot in the hip. My own platoon had already experienced an uptick in firefights. And so that's the way it'd be for the rest of the deployment. Skirmishes and firefights and near-death experiences. It was another day in the grips of a hot summer. Another section was out on patrol. The radios in the COC burst to life. They were engaged in a firefight with a large group of Taliban fighters. We could hear the chattering gunfire in the distance. My section geared up to go out and assist. We hurried out in a squad of 8. Leaving behind a thin crew to man the base. We leapt over canals, bound over open desert and barren fields of scrubby thorn bushes, closing in on our objective. We ended up at a large compound, bigger than most in the area. A small group of locals sat outside, young boys mostly. They were selling bread and, surprisingly, ice. We set up a security perimeter around the compound. The gunfire had ceased by the time we got there. A woman broke away from the group, approaching us. She was short, heavyset. It was rare to see in that place, someone with meat on their bones. Age was always hard to gauge, but she was probably in her 40s. That she lived even that long was impressive. Her face was uncovered and looked like leather, creased by a harsh life in a harsh land, tempered by something that looked like kindness, happiness even. An intricate tattoo dotted her forehead and cheeks. She started talking in Pashto to our interpreter. She told him she prayed for us, that she loved us being there and what we were doing, that we'd pushed away the Taliban constantly harassing her and her family. Her market thrived. Then she hugged each one of us. She wasn't afraid. She only saw humans, not Marines. We learned she didn't have a husband. Like so many others, he'd been killed by war. Us or the Taliban, a drone strike, or maybe an IED meant for patrol. Did it matter anymore? But she still wasn't afraid. She was raising a family of a dozen kids in a war zone. How could she be afraid? Slowly, the rest of her children peeked out of the wide compound entryway. Young, 2 to 10 for the most part. Some wore worn-out sandals. Some were barefoot, feet swollen from a lifetime of walking on hot sand and rock. They were all dressed in ragged clothing. The lady said something to her kids, short and clipped in her guttural tone. The children disappeared. After a minute, they shuffled back out with fresh loaves of flatbread in their hands. She was so young, the little girl that walked towards me, holding her hand out. 4, maybe 5, completely innocent. Her face was smeared with dirt. Her hair was matted, wiry and thick, never washed since the day she was born. Her little fingers pinched down on a piece of bread that had perfectly charred, lumpy pockets of air. There was no fear in her eyes either, just kindness and curiosity. I smiled. My detachment quickly faded. I couldn't help it. Without thinking, I loosened the grip of my trigger finger against the trigger, letting my rifle dangle against the magazine pouches of my plate carrier. I nodded my head, taking the bread. I noticed that both our hands were filthy, our nails caked underneath with dirt from flesh of the desert. The only difference was that my hands were hidden under tan-colored gloves, and I'd get to go home to America when all was said and done. Manana, I said in Pashto, thanking her. She smiled bashfully, then ran back into the compound. The other children passed out bread to the Marines, keeping vigil around the perimeter. The bread was so good. I savored its crispy, soft texture, crunching on bits of sand that had been kneaded into the dough. The gesture, the decency, made it the best thing I'd ever eaten. They were giving us food from their own stockpile, showing us compassion and kindness I'd rarely received in my own country. And if it couldn't get any better, that little girl came out with a chunk of ice for me. In the middle of Afghanistan, I was holding a chiseled chunk of ice. We didn't even have ice. I took off my glove, felt the meltwater run through my dry, cracked hands. I popped it in my mouth like candy. I crunched down on it, noticing it too had gritty bits of dirt and sand. It tasted like earth, but it was so damn good. I gave her my water, all the bottles I carried. I gave her all my snacks. I gave her everything I had. We all did, returning the gesture in kind to a family showing us how much they cared. You know, We Marines, we grunts are called many things, sometimes derogatory from our own fellow Americans. Killers, monsters, that were too dumb for college, so that's why we joined. But it's rare we're called humanitarians or ambassadors of goodwill. But there we were, in a foreign land that knew only war, showing that family the best of us, and showing us the best of them. These moments would never be seen by the public at large back home. These moments were so private, so intimate, that it could only be cherished by those who were there. And, like a rare bird, gone so fast, you wondered if it was ever there at all. In that moment, we weren't Marines, and they weren't Afghanis. We weren't even in a war zone. We were simply humans, sharing a humane moment in a place where I wasn't even looking for it. We spent the better part of an hour with that family, talking to them through our interpreter. The kids couldn't help but stare. When you looked at them, they'd smile shy smiles, then looked away, understanding we weren't there to hurt them, but protect them, even with our own lives. They drank the bottles of water, ate the candy we gave them, laughed at our goofy faces we made. It took me years to realize the lesson I learned that day. One about acceptance and kindness, taught to me by a family who accepted me as human. Nothing more, nothing less. Showing us all the decency of the human spirit. As the years go by and my edges soften, I ask myself, if the kindness of one human to another can exist in a place like that, why can't it exist anywhere else? And what can I do to help light the way? You know, it's funny when I recount that story, it still gets me emotional. I don't get emotional about a lot of things, but when I look back in that moment, that experience, you know, I've talked about the combat aspect of my experience in Afghanistan and the Marine Corps, but it was experiences like this where we got to see the human sides of ourselves. You know, them seeing us as more than just occupiers of their land, more than just brutish humans carrying weapons and blowing everything up. It's not what they saw. They saw people there that wanted to help them and help keep them safe. You know, and they appreciated that and they were grateful for it. You know, when we moved to these new sections of our patrol area, we were very aggressive, and weapons company in particular, we pushed out large elements of Taliban. We ended up being pretty damn near close to where a lot of them lived. And, you know, part of this whole drawdown with Afghanistan and the way this administration completely fucked it up, you know, I think the thing that gets me emotional about recounting these experiences is knowing that families like that, these families that appreciated us and sometimes helped us, they were going to be the first ones targeted by the Taliban. And the United States of America failed 100% with the mission of winning hearts and minds, right? Because that's what it became after a while, hearts and minds. And we failed. Just like we failed everything since World War II. But that's not, I digress. So I wanted to share this story because you look around today and there's a lot of hate it seems like nobody wants to be empathetic anymore. And it seems like nobody wants to listen to what someone else has to say that maybe they don't agree with, or they're on the other side of some issue with. And where did that breakdown happen? Why? Where did we stop? When did we stop being okay with hearing what the other side has to say? When did we get so mentally frail and weak that we just didn't want to hear what they have to say? Because I don't know. I can only think that there's some kind of mental thing going on where people can't handle that. And this is an issue on the right and the left in the United States. This isn't unique to one side. This is a problem both sides have. Again, these extreme sides aren't interested in being empathetic and listening. They want power and control. So I wanted to share the story because I wanted all of you to know that in some of the worst fucking places in the world, people usually end up being the best. And that's not always the case, but in this case, this experience with this family, it was the most wholesome experience I'd had in my entire time in Afghanistan. Was this, giving us this food and ice and just for a very brief moment, we were just people. We were just humans. We weren't there worried about getting killed, and they weren't there worried about getting killed. It was just, we were like having discussions and laughing, and we could kind of be something more than infantry. We could be ourselves, and that's a beautiful thing sometimes. So remember, one of the greatest gifts you can give another person is empathy. You don't have to be sympathetic. You don't have to feel sorry for them. Just put your fucking put yourself in their shoes just for a second. Play that mental mind game, because it might help you understand where they're coming from. And that's what we need more of. We need more understanding of where the other sides are coming from. And I don't even care what side you're on. I don't fucking care. If it isn't obvious, I'm pretty apolitical. I don't buy into this two-party politic bullshit. But that's irrelevant, because what I'm talking about goes beyond the politics. It goes beyond all that. It's about being fucking human and decent. Because we can be that. Because if we could be that in Afghanistan, in the middle of a combat zone, then all you fuckers out there can do the same damn thing. So you might have to set aside your ego. Boo-hoo. So what? You might learn something. All right. So I think that's going to wrap up this episode of the Heathen Machine Chronicles. Man, as always, I'm so grateful for everyone that listens. Been getting messages lately. Sometimes it's hard to judge whether, what I'm doing is reaching or resonating or anything like that. So I really appreciate the positive input I've gotten on this podcast. I certainly intend on keeping it going. Even if I end up taking breaks off social media, this podcast, I will most certainly keep this going. Actually, I'll just tell you now, next week, so you might want to stay tuned for next week's episode. I will be getting into why it's important to have a relationship with our food. And what I mean by that, I don't mean stuffing your fat face. I mean, understanding where your food comes from and why these systems aren't always the best, and why I don't care if you're vegan or if you eat meat. Like, I don't care. This isn't about that. Because this applies to anybody that eats food nowadays that's not growing their own 100%, right? So that's something I'm going to be touching on next week. That's something I've been pretty I've been into that for a while, especially when I first got into homesteading years ago. You can catch new episodes of the Heathen Mission Chronicles every Wednesday. Find them wherever podcasts are found. Again, I'm grateful for everyone that's listening. Stay hydrated, stay cool, stay in the shade. Take care of yourself, take care of those in your circle. And remember, try to be a little more empathetic. From deep in the Ozark foothills, Heathen Machine